Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the propaganda war when we come back. You know, if you have an income of $50,000 a year, you're paying about $7,650 in Social Security taxes if you're one of those that's self-employed and paying that 15.3%. Well, then, shouldn't you subtract that $7,650 from your $50,000 income and pay your income tax on the $42,350 balance instead of paying 17% of the $50,000 twice? Now, you know the IRS makes you pay 15.3% of $50,000 once in the form of Social Security tax, and then they make you pay 17% of $50,000 twice in the form of income tax, and that means that you pay 17% of the $7,650 two times. Now, that little bookkeeping trick, that steals an extra $1,300 from you and everyone else that pays that tax. Now, what would you think if Sears, Penny's, or your credit card company charged you twice like Social Security and the IRS does? I thought you'd think that's just real special. Now, if you'd like a little more information about this tax and status question, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining. It's educational. It's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can order one right now. Now, Tax and Status, our school, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email when you get there and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book, Warriors of Disinformation. It's one of these 1 in 20 books. I like to rate books. You know, if you read a book and you have to read 20 of them to find a book that's got this kind of information in it, well, then it tells you something. So this is a pretty valuable book. Now, this isn't the only book out there that talks about the American Intelligence Service or the spying operations that go on from country to country around the world, but it's a good one because it's written by an insider. It's not just an author that's, you know, interviewing. It's not a newspaper reporter who's interviewing some government official and then putting a story together. This is a book that's actually written by a guy that spent years in the business. He's in the craft. And then when he finishes his tour of duty or he retires, he sits down and says, well, let me tell you the story. Here's what happened 25 years ago with this Korean Airlines plane. And what we were told in the news media 25 years ago and what this guy is telling us from the inside is a whole nother story. And it's a fascinating story because it gives us an insight into how the government works and how it's worked in the past. And then you take a look at history. Now we take a look at our history books and say, geez, that's what they did with the Spanish-American War in 1898. Hey, that's what they did with World War I with the Lusitania. Hey, that's what they did with World War II at Pearl Harbor. Hey, that's what they did with the Gulf of Tonkin Resolution with the Vietnam War. Hey, that's what they did with the trade towers in New York City to get us into the war with Iraq. I mean, hell, nothing's changed. Now, there's more wars coming up, so when the wars in the future come up, if you're tuned in to the information wars or the disinformation, why, then you can better protect yourself. You can better understand what's going on around you. Gives you a little better appreciation for Bible prophecy, a little better appreciation for God than what he tells you as to whether or not it's true or false. Now, most people today believe the Bible is false. That's disinformation that comes out of the propaganda war. The Bible is true, accurate, and correct. Does it have mistranslations? Yes, 172 in the King James Version. Are those 172 mistakes that God made? No, he didn't make any. Are those 172 mistakes made by translators? Yes, all of them. Were those translations and those errors made intentionally? Some of them. Were some of those mistranslations done in error? Yes, most of them. Can we understand the 172 mistranslations and get them correct? Yes, all of them. So it's a matter of, is that what you wanted to do? Is that what you had in mind? Now, in the Bible, we're told, let God be true, though every man be found a liar. And in Revelation 12:9, he says, the whole world's been deceived. And so I took a look at that some years ago and said, oh, my God, if that's true, then that includes me. I'm part of all of the world. So, you know, if all the world's been deceived, well, that would include me. So I take a new look. And as I began turning rocks over, I found out, yep, he's right. I have been deceived. I've been deceived a lot of times. I believed a lot of lies. And I believe a lot of lies right now today, and I'll probably be lied to and believe those lies in the future. God love Katie Couric. I mean, doesn't she put on a good story? And hell, she probably even believes some of the lies she's telling us. And that's what fraud is all about. So when we look up fraud in the legal dictionary, we find out that fraud is a deception. But sometimes it's an actual, and sometimes it's a constructive fraud. Now here's the difference, in case you're wondering. An actual fraud is where I lie to you, and I know I'm lying to you, and I've got an agenda, and I'm lying to you with a deliberate, premeditated forethought. I mean, it's just a bald-faced lie. But a constructive fraud is something different than that. A constructive fraud is where I lie to you. You're just as deceived, but I actually believe I'm telling you the truth. So when Colin Powell went before the United Nations, my take on it is that it was a constructive fraud. That Colin Powell actually came into the United Nations, lied to him about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq with the purpose of getting us involved in the war. But he, honest to God, believed the lies he was telling. He was deceived himself. So in effect, he was an innocent victim of somebody else's lying chicanery. All right, now, an actual positive lie, that's where somebody's lying to you and they've got an agenda. And they actually know the truth, but they have to perpetrate this lie. And many of these are really good liars. I mean, politicians in general are liars. And some of them have it down to an art form. I mean, they're really good. Franklin D. Roosevelt was probably the champion. I mean, that guy could lie to you and make you believe it and make you love it. You could sit there. My dad told me, he said, you know that the SOB is lying to you, but you love every word of it. Especially his fireside chats. That was my dad. He's kind of a colorful guy, you know. He used colorful language. And then Bill Clinton. He was great. Bill Clinton, one of the most accomplished liars God ever put breath into. I mean, that guy's really good, really good. Of course, I didn't know FDR, so I couldn't compare Clinton to FDR. But Clinton was good. I always liked Bill. And George Bush. He's so sincere. See, George Bush is a pathological liar, just like I am, pathological. But George is so innocent in the way he does it. I mean, you know the way he mispronounces words? See, he puts a little homey spin on it, kind of like an Ozarks hillbilly, you know, telling you a fish story. And you want to believe the guy because it's so from the heart. You know what I mean? And so, but I think he's really the pathological, and I think he really knows more than he's letting on. Now, Dick Cheney is great. Dick Cheney, oh, God, I love him. He is so sincere, and he uses logic. I mean, you know, when he's spinning out his stories, you know, he just lays it out like, you know, you don't have to be a brain scientist, you know, or a brain surgeon to figure this out, or, you know, a PhD. I mean, you know, come on. Those, you know, just plumbers can figure this out. Telling us, you know, about weapons of mass destruction and the Iraqis and Saddam Hussein. And see, you're taking some truth. See, that Saddam Hussein was a real jerk. I find it hard to believe, you know, that anybody would think he was a nice guy. I mean, he killed a lot of people. People that run around murdering people are kind of jerks, and so I think Saddam Hussein was a real jerk, but he wasn't as big a jerk as he's been portrayed. And he's a part of the propaganda war, but see, he lost the propaganda war, and the Russians, you know, they weren't as good at the propaganda war as were the Americans. And while this war is going on, see, there are real warriors out there that are being manipulated on both sides by the super liars called the Illuminati, who John Coleman calls the Committee of 300. I mean, there's people out there that really know what's going on because they're the orchestrators that are orchestrating the goings-on. Now, down here at the lower levels, there are people in our government, like at the U.S. Information Agency, and those are the spin doctors. Those are the guys that take the stories and actually put them into print. They actually put them out on the television. See, they actually give it to Katie Couric, and Katie comes out, and she tells us the story. And then we sit here, you know, and go, wow, you know, God, everybody loves America's favorite cheerleader, Katie Couric. And she actually probably believes a lot of the propaganda that's going on. But see, that's not exactly true because some of these people belong to the Bilderbergers or they belong to the Council on Foreign Relations. And they actually are privy to information that you and I aren't. And they actually know a whole lot more and they ought to be more suspicious, but they're not. Well, at least they don't let on to be. Now, going back to the Korean Airlines 007 developments, the Kremlin was reeling from all of the bad press that was beginning to get worldwide. And Andropov ordered an emergency meeting of the Central Committee. He ordered an emergency meeting of the Politburo to consider a public relations plan of action. Those who were present would include the Soviet premier, the general secretary, the KGB secret police chairman, the foreign minister, and the head of the Russian armed forces, among others. And they were particularly angry over Reagan's strident remarks. General Secretary Konstantin Cherenko set the tone for the meeting by insisting that something had to be done about the wild orgy of American propaganda that has been launched. The important thing is that the first step has already been taken. It was an announcement that had appeared in our press, and the official news agency TASS had broken a day of silence on the incident, issuing a watered-down two-paragraph item stating only that a Russian fighter had intercepted a Korean airliner that had violated Soviet airspace. It gave no indication that the plane had been shot down. Gromyko expressed his concern over how quickly Reagan had spoken out on the subject, and that now the United States was demanding an immediate session of the UN Security Council. Clearly, we will have to use our veto, said Gromyko. He announced that the Japanese had indicated that they had recordings of the conversations between the pilot and the ground services. So he concluded, imperialistic propaganda will try to portray our moves as a deliberate attack on a peaceful plane and a violation of all of the international conventions. All right, so now the Russians are on the defensive. Now the Russians shot it down because it was a spy plane. But who in the hell is going to believe it's a spy plane? See? It's kind of like the trip to the moon, you know, which was about as phony as a $3 bill produced on a soundstage, you know, down at NASA in Florida. But everybody believes it. And so because everybody believes it, of course, the Russians know it's not true. You know, the moon landing. Well, I'm very dubious. Notice we haven't made any further trips to the moon. We made that one, well, it was about four or five trips to the moon, and we quit. Huh? We quit? Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Why would we quit making trips to the moon? Why would we quit in our dream to colonize the moon? Why would we quit in our dream to establish military bases on the moon if we could actually fly to the moon? You know, when we saw the movie, The Titanic, did you actually believe what you were seeing? Those were computer animations, and they were god-awful good. Really good. Really good. And so, you know, you can do a lot with trick photography. You can do a lot on a soundstage. You know, you can portray things. Hell, we've been watching movies, you know, for generations now. Now, I know that everybody believes that Neil Armstrong stepped off onto the moon, but have you ever seen any of the technical criticisms of the stories that go along with that moon landing? Well, I saw some of them, and the shadows are incorrect. The dust is incorrect. And the technology involved in the technical analysis, you know, reveals that it was a fraud. Was it a persuasive story? Certainly. The movie, The Titanic, was a very, very persuasive story, which was about 90% fiction. There are true accounts that came out of committee hearings from eyewitnesses and testimony. But hell, that doesn't play well on a movie blockbuster. You know, when you want to make a movie, you got to have a story. You got to have a plot. You got to have a boy and a girl. You got to have sex. You've got to have drama. And that isn't the way the real world works, you know, in a disaster like the sinking of the Titanic. And so Hollywood takes what they call license. And that's all the U.S. Information Agency is doing. They take license. That's all the propaganda people do is take license. In other words, we're trying to impress. We're trying to make people believe a lie. So we're going to tell some truth. We're going to tell some lies. And we're going to put the whole story together. Now, the Russians on this 007 got behind the power curve. And the Americans had to take the offensive. And by taking the offensive, and portraying this as an airliner that got off course. Remember I mentioned last time 365 miles? Listen, there are thousands of airliners in the world flying around the world today, and there's not a single one of them that's going to get 365 miles off course. About the most that any airliner ever gets off course would be 1 or 2 miles. Maybe 1 or 2 miles. And there's a guy that sits in there, and that's his job. That's what he gets paid for. That's all he does is just sit there all the whole flight, hour after hour, plotting courses and taking triangulations and radio signals. And he probably even takes a sextant and takes a shot on the stars at night and says, okay, here's where we're at. Now, guys, that airplane was 365 miles off course, but it wasn't an accident. So we got to ask ourselves, how come it was flying over Russian military bases? Because everybody knew the Russians wouldn't dare shoot one of those down. Now, the Russians are caught in a double whammy, a catch-22. The Americans are using civilian airliners to fly over our territory and take pictures. It's a clear violation of law. But how are we going to prove it? So the Russians shoot down the airplane. Now, can they come out and say, well, look at the cameras we found on the airplane? No, because of the propaganda blitz, they had to shut up about it, just like the moon landings. They have to shut up about it because they lost the propaganda blitz. Now, you know, a lot of people say, well, that's impossible to believe. Well, of course it's impossible to believe. That's what propaganda is all about. If we're going to make it believable, it has to be impossible not to believe it. That's what makes it work. My God, children, if you could understand the truth, the propaganda wouldn't work, would it? If you knew the con man's lie, he couldn't con you, could he? A con man has to be believable. In fact, a con man has to be more believable than the truth. And that's what makes George Bush and Dick Cheney so marvelous in their roles as con men. They're so believable. Well, except for George. Now, you see, our president's getting to the point now where he lies so many times and got caught so many times that he's really not as credible as he used to be. But, boy, prior to the election in 2004, I mean, if George said it, it's gospel. If prior to the election in 2004, Jesus Christ of Nazareth made a statement, which he made a lot of them in the Bible, and George Bush made a statement, people would believe George over the Bible any day. They would believe George Bush over Jesus Christ any day of the week. No questions asked. And that would be among Christians, non-Christians, atheists, anybody. Now, today, you know, it would be about a flip, you know, about a toss-up as to whether you believe George Bush or Jesus. You know, about 50-50. Just goes to show you what people think of the Bible, doesn't it? So here's defense, Mr. Ustinov. He agreed and defended the action. The South Korean plane had flown deep within Soviet airspace and not responded to repeated instructions to identify itself. Ustinov also informed the group erroneously that the Korean plane had had no navigational lights, and that the Soviet pilot had fired tracer shells to warn the Korean crew. His contention that the destruction of KE-007 was justified would be echoed by the meeting's other participants. They agreed that the United States provoked the attack. This was a well-planned anti-Soviet act, and this must be stated frankly in the press and in our statements, which will reach foreign readers as well as our own. Now, the group of aging bureaucrats in Russia then turned its attention to what the official Soviet press announcement should say. All right, let's pause right here. What the official Soviet announcement should say. So the Russians started lying, coming right out of the chute. And as we're going to see as the story progresses, they got caught in their own lies. So here's two sides. Both sides are lying, but one side gets caught in their lies and the other side doesn't. So the liars that don't get caught get believed, and the liars that get caught, hell, we wouldn't believe them even if they were telling us the truth. And so years later, the Russians come out and they tell us the truth. They give us the black box. They give us the facts. Hell, nobody believes it because by now it's written up in the history books. That's like Pearl Harbor. You're not going to change Pearl Harbor. The history books have already been written. Nobody believes the Lusitania story to this day, and that's because, hell, the history books have already been written. We already know what bad guys the Germans are, don't we? All right, so these lies actually become ingrained in our histories, and so history is typically false. I mean, you know, there was a real war called the Civil War, and there were causes and effects, and there were stories and propaganda that came out on both sides. And then the winner, that's the Union, that's the North, they write the history books of the war. Our perception of our own civil war is written by the victors. Just that simple. Our perceptions of World War II here in America, Canada, and Australia are written by the victors, not by the losers. See, the losers, they got a story to tell too. And oftentimes, the stories that we hear, the stories about the losers, are also written by the victors. You know, so the victors are writing the stories about the victorious armies, and then they're writing the stories about the vanquished armies. And then this gives us a perception of the war, which is false. But that's the perception that we're supposed to believe. Now, I reported to you here not too long ago a story on Dead Men's Secrets. If you haven't heard that series, you ought to turn to it because it's very, very informative on this thing called the deception. It adds a little bit more to the picture. And the deception is this. This is just one of the stories that came out of the book. There are 29 archaeological locations in the world where we find fused glass, which is created by nuclear weapons, which fuses the sand in the ground into this glass. Now, the first time we ever observed this in modern times, and we could actually scientifically investigate it and look at it, was after the Alamogordo, New Mexico nuclear blast, July 16, 1945. And we looked at the glass under the powder that was formed in the sand from the heat of the nuclear weapon and said, oh my God, look at this. Now, there's 29 other sites around the world with the same nuclear fused glass that were all created prior to July 16th, 1945. Now, boys and girls, let me ask you the $64,000 question. Were there nuclear weapons and nuclear technology at some time prior to July 16th, 1945? Okay, we'll give you about 15 more seconds. Mull it over. Think about it. 10 seconds. No, it's kind of like a quiz, no, isn't it? I mean, how smart do you have to be to figure that out? Now, why is it then that archaeology hasn't revealed that? Why don't we read about that in our archaeology textbooks when we went to college? Remember, kids? How come we don't see photographs and pictures any longer of giants, giant skeletons? Do you know that the Smithsonian has a whole collection of giant skeletons, but none of them are on display? Did you know there was a 14-foot skeleton on display until 1940 in the Chicago Museum of Natural History? I don't know what happened to it, but it's no longer on display. And it's because it doesn't fit in with the theory of evolution. It doesn't fit in with what's already written in the textbooks concerning evolution, concerning the Bible. Now, the Bible tells us there were giants in the earth in those days. And we have the skeletons, and we have the photographs, we have the pictures. They're there. We know they exist. The Bible is vindicated as being true, but archaeology doesn't corroborate that. Why not? And that's because there's a propaganda blitz They tell us some truths. They go out to a site and they dig up a bunch of bones and pottery. Then they spin a story and they say, well, here's the way these people live and here's the story. And we believe it because it's in the book. That's propaganda. Now, there's a reason for that propaganda. Propaganda is being disseminated in our colleges and in our high schools and in our grade schools. And it's to create a perception. It's to create a lie in the minds of everybody that's listening. Now, does that mean the truth can't be known? Oh, no, no, we can read. It's there. It's available. But it's not popularized. And if it isn't popularized, then it's disbelieved. It's discounted. You do it. I do it. We all do it. It's just part and parcel of your mental processes. All right. Now, in order for you and I to get behind this mental process, you know, most people, they like the lies that they believe because it's comfortable. And if I come out and I tell you, did you know that there was nuclear technology prior to 1945? That's uncomfortable because now it doesn't fit in with your mental processes, and you'd have to do a lot of research and reading to find out, well, what really happened? What's the real truth? This would overturn all of the knowledge that you have comfortably stored between your ears. And that's discomforting. It's disquieting. We don't want to do that. Besides that, it takes work and effort, and we don't want to expand or expend that kind of energy. So we continue believing the lies because it's more convenient. Now, that's your choice in life, and I don't want to get in the way of your happiness and success, but occasionally you run across an iconoclast out there that says, hey, I'd like to spend the time, effort, and energy to understand this. That's why I thought I'd pick out this 007 story, and let's analyze it, and let's find out who's lying to who. And now we find out that the Russians are lying. We know the Americans are lying. And we got two sets of liars, but one of them gets caught coming right out of the chute. So what's the upshot? What's going to happen next? So let's take a pause here and let me give you a reminder that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. For more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, it's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals but by prearrangement. Now, the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has a radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often introduce and endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that those authors and publications are going to endorse and recommend the Law Hour and editorial review. And that's because most of these authors and publications that we use here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. So for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, you go to our website, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we are reviewing the book. Let me tell you where you get a copy of it. It's called Warriors of Disinformation, American Propaganda, Soviet Lies, and the Winning of the Cold War, written by Alvin A. Snyder. This is called an insider's account, written by an American who believes his own propaganda, as you can tell by American propaganda and Soviet lies. You see, Americans don't lie. We give out propaganda, that which is useful information. But the Soviets, they're liars. Oh, no. No. The Soviets give out propaganda and lies, and the Americans give out propaganda and lies, and so do the Brits, and the Canadians, and the Australians, and the Russians, and the Chinese, and the Jews, and the Egyptians, and everybody's doing the same thing. Everybody's engaged in the same business. Now, the trick is for you and I to decipher who's lying and who's telling the truth, which is why we go into some of these various and sundry stories, so to give you an opportunity, if you so desire, give you an opportunity to delineate the truth from those lies for yourself. Now, the guy that wrote the book, Alvin A. Snyder. And the book is called Warriors of Disinformation. You can get a copy of it easily from bravenewbookstore.com. They sent this to me to review, bravenewbookstore.com. Or you can call them at 512 512-480-2503. That's 512-480-2503. I don't see a price on it, but I'm guessing you can probably, oh, here it is. It says FPT, $13.95. It's in paperback. $18.95 in Canada. And you Canadians ought to just be mad as hell about that, because your money's more valuable than the American dollar right now. So if you have to pay a penny more than $13.95 for it, you ought to just jump up and down, paw the ground, bite the bushes, and get mad as hell. Now, from his hospital bed, Andropov, remember Andropov, the premier, he approved the plan that very morning. Gromyko began to talk to the press, claiming that KE-007 had entered Soviet airspace and that it did not have navigation lights, did not respond to queries, and did not enter into contact with the radio control service, the fighter planes, which were sent aloft toward the intruder plane. And he continued, tried to give it assistance in directing it to the nearest airfield, but the intruder plane did not react to the signals and warnings from the Soviet fighters. Now I'm going to get a little bit anticlimactic. That was the dead lie that gave the Russians the black eye coming out of the chute. And that's because the Americans actually had the recordings of the Soviet pilots. And the pilots are flying up saying, oh, yeah, I see the strobe lights. Oh, yeah, I can recognize the plane. It's a Korean Airlines. Oh, yeah, I can recognize it. It's a 747. So, see, the Soviet propaganda machine is way behind the power curve. And they come right out of the chute responding to the Americans with lies. And it just blew them right out of the water. The Americans couldn't believe the propaganda blitz. Number one, they got a spy plane. It gets caught and blown out of the sky. Then the Russians come out and lie about it. And then the Americans jump on it with both feet, blow the Russians out of the water so that nobody would believe their claim that it was a spy plane. Now, let me tell you, when a 747 is 365 miles off course, taint by accident, they're there and they know exactly where they're at and why. But, they're, you know, they set their course back here in Anchorage, see? And to make the story look good, in case they get caught, you know, in case something goes bad, we don't want to have another one of these Francis Gary Powers U-2 incidents where the Soviets score on us. So we got to have a good cover story. That's what these cover stories are all about, children. So on Friday, the Soviet news agency TASS repeated the same line. KE-007 had no navigational lights. Soviet fighters had attempted to contact the intruder using generally accepted signals and to take it to the nearest airfield in the territory of the Soviet Union. And Soviet aircraft fired warning shots with tracer shells along the flying route of the plane. So that was another lie. They didn't do any of that. And you see, the Americans are out there listening in to what the Russians are talking about. And as the story goes on, they're going to take it right into the United Nations. And the Americans are better liars than the Russians in this case. And so everybody believes the Americans. Now, the Americans are telling the truth. Oh, don't you think for a minute now that the Americans ain't telling the truth? They are. But they're mixing it with lies. See, they give us an overall perception. That's the trick in being a good con man. A spokesman for the Soviet Air Defense Forces maintained that the interceptor pilot had thought that the intruder was a KC, or it was a USRC, 135 reconnaissance plane. Despite the inaccuracies, the Soviet version of what happened, as we later learned, was a whole lot closer to reality than our own. See, later on, 10 years later, when we put the story together, the Soviets, they come clean, see, and they tell the truth. And then when they tell the truth, it shows what the Americans' lies were at the time. And it shows us that this was indeed a civilian airliner, which was a spy plane, taking pictures over Soviet territory. I mean, that's where the real truth is. But see, nobody believes it to this day. And that's what makes this fraud so spectacular. Because now it's written up in the history books. And everybody believes it. And we'll continue to believe it. Nothing is going to change. And until you and I come along and we read the book, Warriors of Disinformation, so that we can grasp what really happened. That way, in the future, when the next president, you know, President Clinton, you know, if she wins, or President Obama, because he's going to do the same thing. There are going to be events transpire. And when these events transpire, he's going to lie about them. And Congress and congressional aides and these people are going to be lying to us. And we're going to read these stories in the papers. But now, after having read the book, understanding how the system works, how it has worked over the last 100 years, how it's worked over the last 500 years, then we'll be able to put our minds to the problem and say, oh, yeah, I can see through this line. Oh, now I understand. Hey, this is just like they did in World War II. Hey, this is just exactly the same thing. It's very predictable. Very predictable. Once you get the code, you can start putting the pieces of the puzzle together. Now, the Soviets made several fatal public relations blunders. First, instead of letting the story dribble out slowly, they should have gone on the offensive like the Americans did. After all, they had all the evidence. They had it in their hand. They could have used it to take the initiative, blunting our effort. Had the Soviets done so in cohesive, dramatic fashion, stating precisely what had happened, things would have been much different. Blame would have been placed squarely on the inept South Korean flight crew and on the United States, which had been monitoring its flight and had done nothing about it. Now think about this. The Americans are monitoring this whole scenario. The Americans could have called up the Korean airliner and said, hey boys, you're 365 miles too far north. The fact that the Americans never alerted the Koreans tells you the answer to the riddle. Now, the Russians are monitoring the whole thing also. What the Russians didn't know was that the Americans were monitoring it from their base in Japan. So this is a case of spy v. spy. It's almost like reading Mad Magazine, you know, spy versus spy. It gets to be kind of humorous after you get the facts together. Now, the loss of so many innocent lives was a tragedy of monumental proportions, of course, but the Soviets could have shifted the blame away from themselves and toward the United States, citing, among other things, its hard evidence on the America RC-135 spy missions. Accusing the United States of having used the KE-007 as a spy plane was a costly miscalculation. Before returning to Washington from his abbreviated California vacation, Reagan issued his most scathing denunciation to date, accusing the Soviets of advancing its interests through violence and intimidation, and of flagrantly lying about such a heinous act. And with his wife Nancy at his side, Reagan read from a prepared statement before boarding Air Force One at Point Mugu Naval Air Station in California. What are we to make of a regime, he said, which establishes one set of standards for itself and another for the rest of humankind? He asked, Russian citizens lined up at newspapers and kiosks and were insulted and bewildered by Reagan's attack. Many were astonished that an American president could be so venomous toward their country. Well, on Friday, Shultz was told by briefers from the Central Intelligence Agency and the National Security Agency that intelligence data suggested that the Soviets had thought that they were shooting down a U.S. spy plane, not a passenger jet. Shultz dismissed the notion, telling briefers their theory was implausible. The downed plane had been tracked for a long period of time. Its design was distinctive, he maintained. Following the briefing, Shultz told his senior staff that intelligence agencies have no compunction about fooling you. The administration would take the hard line, and everyone in the know, including the intelligence community, would play ball. All right, now here's what the story is. See, everybody on our side knows that this is a real Korean spy plane. But now the Russians get caught lying about it. And then they compound their lies by saying, well, they didn't recognize the silhouette of the 747 compared to the KC-135. That's preposterous poppycock. And you see, the Americans burned them, and they burned them good, because the Soviet fighter pilot flips up behind the plane and he says, oh, yeah, it's a 747. Remember, they said didn't have their strobe lights and navigation lights on. Oh, no, the Soviet pilot says, oh, yeah, I can see their strobe lights. I can recognize it easy. In fact, the Soviet pilot does this. He whips around the Korean plane, gets in front of it, in fact. He's in visual contact with it. But see, the Russians are sitting over here through their official news agency denying it. So the Americans take advantage of the Soviets lying. See, they're not as adept at propaganda as is Hollywood. See, the guy that's running the U.S. Information Agency is a Hollywood producer. Ronald Reagan is a Hollywood actor. These people know what deception's all about. That's what an actor is. An actor is a paid professional liar. He is assuming the role of a character. He's making you believe that he is that character. He makes you believe, like Carlton Heston. Believe it. Carlton Heston is Moses. And when you and I, boys and girls, come up in the resurrection, and we actually see the real Moses, we're not going to believe what we're looking at. Because in our minds, Moses is Carlton Heston, who took on the role of Moses. So when the real Moses and Carlton Heston come together, do you know who we're going to believe the real Moses is? Carlton Heston. Hell, we'll pick him right out of a crowd. All right, now that's what propaganda is all about. It's to make you believe a lie and make you believe that the lie is more credible than the truth. That's the art of propaganda. That's what makes it work. Because if at any time we could look through and we could see the truth, propaganda wouldn't work. You couldn't deceive the whole world. And that's because, you know, it wouldn't be credible. So the lies are actually more credible than the truth. Then there's another old adage that comes down the pike that says, the guy would lie when the truth would serve his purpose better. And in this case, the Russians are lying when the truth would serve their purpose better. Now, could they have forced the plane to land? There's no way in hell that Korean spy plane was going to land. Why? Well, because if it would have landed, well, then it would have revealed that the Americans were using commercial airliners as spy planes and risking the lives of people. And so what happened was the Russians, after several of these spy planes flew over their territory, they finally got a belly full. They didn't know what the hell to do with it. They had this catch-22 problem. We got these civilian planes flying over our territory. You know, the first one flew over and said, well, it's an accident. Second one flies over. Well, okay, that's more than an accident. Third, fourth, and fifth one. Hey, the Americans are using these spy planes just like they used the Lusitania, just like they used the battleship Maine. But what are we going to do about it? So finally, they tried to force it down. The Soviet plane flew out in front of it, said, we're trying to force it to land, and it wouldn't land. So then the next solution was, what are we going to do? So more than likely, back at Russian headquarters, years, you know, at least months in advance, they said, well, then I guess what we're going to have to do is shoot one of them down. And evidently, they did not plan this out very well. Now, maybe a little accident comes into play. I find it hard to believe that the Russians haven't got a better plan than this, but it appears from the story here that's being related by the author, Alvin Snyder, the Russians got snookered. Now, I told you about the Russian submarine, you know, that sank. And the Americans went to Howard Hughes. The American government went to Howard Hughes, and they said, we got this Russian nuclear submarine, and it sank. It's in 5,000 feet of water. How can we get it? And so Howard Hughes built this ship in the Hughes shipyard. They built this huge ship. And it was really technologically a marvel. I mean, this is the first ship that could stay on site by using computers and jets, you know, to keep it exactly straight up and down so that they could reach down 5,000 feet. And they said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to drill for oil in deep water. It was a deep water oil drilling ship with a false center and filled with CIA agents and all kinds of spooks and spies. And they went out and they picked this Russian submarine right up off the bottom of the ocean. It was a technological marvel. It was a spy story that defies description. Of course, it didn't come off quite the way they had envisioned it coming out, but they did a lot. And you can rest assured that every time a Soviet ship sinks, they're out there picking it up right off the bottom of the ocean. And that's because, you know, spying has gotten to be a real art. And what's going to happen in the future, you know, with technology out in space, you can just about rest assured that Americans going up there, you know, with our space shuttle, they're up there investigating Russian spy satellites. Probably went up there and picked up a couple of them, brought them back already. And you won't hear about that for 20 more years. And the Russians, they probably went up there and they probably lifted a couple of American spy satellites and maybe a couple of Jews and maybe a couple of Chinese just for good measure and brought them back and they're analyzing them. I mean, this is the stuff of intelligence gathering. And you and I haven't heard about that yet. But I don't doubt for a minute that that's what's going on. The other day, the Chinese blew a spy satellite out of orbit. I guess it was one of theirs. And then the Americans just did it the other day also. And what you're witnessing here is it's experimentation. It's a learning curve in which we're getting ready for World War III. We're getting ready for the Great Tribulation. We're getting ready for Armageddon, boys and girls. And we're learning how to shoot these satellites out of orbit now. And there's this little learning curve that goes along. Now, the American media swallowed the U.S. government line without reservation, said the venerable Ted Koppel on the ABC News Nightline program. This has been one of those occasions when there's very little difference between what is churned out by the U.S. government propaganda organs and by the commercial broadcasting networks, wrote the New York Times columnist. His name was James Reston. Even if you assume that this whole tragic affair was a case of mistaken identity, which takes quite a stretch of imagination, the Soviet response to it has been so bizarre, so indifferent to the human tragedy, and so vicious in its charge against the United States and the South Koreans that it can be explained only by the Russians' pathological fear of freedom. Our media heavies, such as Koppel and Reston, had weighed in, and we at the USIA began to see a major public relations opportunity to link the incident to nuclear disarmament issues. We realized that raising concerns about Soviet trustworthiness in security and arms control areas would do serious damage to the Kremlin's peace campaign to dissuade Western European NATO allies from placing upgraded American nuclear weapons aimed at the Soviet Union on their soil. So the KE-007 disaster would enable us to put the competence of the Soviet military in considerable doubt. Administration sources had been privately raising this issue with press contacts, but now it was out in the open. Eagleburger said that the Soviet downing of the Korean airline plane raises the most serious questions about the competence of the Soviet air defense system with all the danger that that implies. Kind of like Three Mile Island. See, Three Mile Island was a great propaganda blitz on the part of the anti-nuclear industry. You know, you got Chernobyl, and you got that was a real disaster. There's just no two ways about it. Then comes Three Mile Island, and we take a look and we say, well, let's compare Three Mile Island with Chernobyl. And then the movie, The China Syndrome. And then who is it that wants to abolish nuclear power in the United States or do away with it? Now just ask yourself this. The Japanese, I think it's 60 to 80% of their electric power comes from nuclear power plants. And here in the United States, it's about 20%. And in France, it's another, I think it's 80%. And then you hear the propaganda. Oh, my God, what will we do with the nuclear waste? And what about Yucca Mountain and all those people in Nevada that are wringing their hands? And oh, my God, all right, this is just propaganda. You see, the French and the Japanese don't have Yucca Mountain, do they? And they dispose of their nuclear waste, don't they? And they're not nearly as dependent as they would be on Arab oil, are they? Now, why is it that the French and the Japanese are so far ahead of us in nuclear technology and nuclear power plants? Propaganda. See, you and I have a view of the nuclear industry. And we got that view from our newspapers. We got it from Rustin and Ted Koppel. We get it from the movies in Hollywood. And some of it's just entertainment, like the China Syndrome. But even entertainment can be used as propaganda. The China Syndrome coming out just about, or just after, or just before, I forget now which, that Three Mile Island, whether it was accidental or on purpose, it worked its magic. Americans are dead set against nuclear power. Frenchmen aren't, Japanese aren't, and the Germans are dead set on solar power. And they have just aced everybody in solar power production in Germany. They're the world's preeminent solar power producers. And they intend to put a solar power plant on every house in Germany. And well, they won't become 100% self-sufficient, but they'll eliminate half the oil that they're importing in the process. And it's commercially viable, but not in America. Now, why is that? Propaganda. Propaganda. And you know, it's a case of follow the money. Follow the money, and you'll figure this out. I've got to put a mark in here. And we'll put it right up here on top of page 51. Next time, we'll take it up right there, talking about 007 and the book called Warriors of Disinformation by Alvin A. Snyder. Next time on the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Hey, we're running out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard worldwide over the internet daily. Now, if you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, time's up. We got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.